Existence. Here comes that cue again. Look out, it's going to get you. And you go into the side pocket. All right, now listen, we have something really extraordinary for you tonight, and it's taken no little doing, I might point out. So set your tape recorders, all you tape recorder cuckoos. You're going to hear something really... I'll guarantee you, you will not hear at any other point on the dial, at any time, and at any situation of confluction of program attitudes. How do you like that, man? Hey, you know, I've had a theory for a long time, and I'm going to lay it on you for what it's worth, that nothing ever really disappears. Not really. By disappear, I mean nothing ever really goes away totally. It may disappear from sight, but it never stops. And you know that there are theories around about the space that bear out what I'm saying. As a matter of fact, some of the most interesting experiments that have been done by far space travelers, guys flying around the moon, for example, is listening to radio broadcasts from the Earth. Now, not much of this has gotten much publicity, do you agree? They did a series of experiments, and they found that the actual reception from space capsules flying around the moon of broadcast signals. We're not talking about shortwave. We're talking about stations like WOR and WMGM, WMCA. And, you know, in other words, regular broadcast stations all around the world is fantastic. They can really hear them up there. You've heard that, haven't you? Now, one thing they did notice, though, was that there is, of course, a time lag, naturally. That means that it takes a certain amount of time for a radio signal to travel from Earth to the moon. Now, how much time this is the same as it takes the time of light to travel. So if you know anything about the traveling of light, 186,000 miles a second, I believe it is that correct? You'll find that this is the case of, how's that? Whipping it right out of the old thing there. So this is the case, of course, of radio signals. They travel at the same speed of light. And they have much of the same properties of light, incidentally. So the theory, of course, is that they never really fade out or disappear entirely. So if you go far enough out in space, here's the point we're getting at. If you go far enough out in space, if you were able to somehow magically send a capsule or something instantaneously to the far reaches of space, let's say, on the order of a billion miles from here, something like that, and turn on a radio set, you would be hearing radio shows that were broadcast years before, and they're coming in out there now, and they're coming in at a fairly consistent volume and clearly readable, and to a person listening to those out there, they would hear Graham McNamee, for example, describing Calvin Coolidge's inauguration, and it would sound like it's actually happening. Now, if you think this is theory, I'll have to point out to you that it is not theory. It happens to be an absolute fact. Not theory at all. In fact, the facts of the matter are that you know, of course, that it takes years for the light from a star to travel to the United States, sometimes as many as 300, 400, 500 years. So the light that you see when you look up at a star many times has left that star, actually originated 400 years or so before you see it. So if you could really look at it very carefully, you would be seeing the scene on that star of 400 years prior to your vision. You would not be seeing what's actually happening there now, because it will take 400 years for that sight to get to the Earth. Okay, do you follow that? Now, that's a theory. That's fact. That's the whole light year concept and so on. So this is also true of radio. They were amazed at how well radio is received out there in outer space. And the signals go on and on forever. There's a theory that nothing has ever stopped from the very beginnings. If you could go far enough out, if you could go millions and billions of miles out, you could hear the very first experiments by Hertz and Marconi. You could actually pick them up. You'd hear this little faint scratching of this guy sending a little spark gap across a Leyden jar. You know, it goes like that. You'd hear it out there, see, and it would sound like static, but actually it would be a radio signal. This is one of the great problems, you know, that they feel about the theory that most people have, that one day we will communicate with people on or things in other parts of the solar system, that actually it may take years for a single conversation to be carried out. That one of the things that bothers them, too, is that if they do hear a signal from outer space, let's say tomorrow morning by magic or just by physical coincidence, the Russians or the Yugoslavians or the Americans or somebody pick up a signal that originated at a very far point of geography in the spatial world out there, that there is a distinct possibility that civilization no longer exists. That they sent a signal out maybe 300, 400, 500 years ago, and they don't exist any longer. Now we're getting the word from them, see? So it's quite possible that long after man disappears from the Earth, way out in other solar systems, they'll be hearing Amos and Andy and wondering what all this is about. So what the point is, that what we've done here tonight to confuse anybody that's a space listener, you know, somebody may be monitoring this broadcast right now on Arcturus or some planet in one of the other solar systems. You'd be hearing this thing here at this minute, though. No, he wouldn't be hearing. He would be hearing shows I did a few years ago. But for guys that are going to be hearing this in the future, we're going to really confuse them tonight, because we have something really extraordinary for you. We've assembled all the equipment here. So if you have your tape recorder set up, I'm about to do something that I've never done on the air, and I don't think I've ever heard of anybody doing it. We are going, all right, before we say anything else, let us do it then. We won't even tell you what we're going to do. Just turn your tape recorders on, and we're all set to begin with what we think is going to be a rather interesting experience.
Good afternoon, radio listeners everywhere. This is WOR in Bamberger's in New York City. And this afternoon, we're bringing you a 5-minute interlude of popular music of the day, sent here by WOR, Icana Toothpaste, Rudy Valley, and also the Chevrolet Corporation of America. So good afternoon, radio listeners, wherever you might be, you're listening to WOR's musical interlude coming to you from the rooftop studios in Bamberger's in New York and Newark, New Jersey. gentlemen, our theme for this afternoon, our musical interlude, is Roger Wolf. Roger Wolf Kahn and his orchestra singing "Let a Smile Be Your Umbrella." Thank you, Roger Wolf Kahn and the orchestra. That was Roger Wolf Kahn and the boys in the orchestra playing and singing "Let a Smile Be Your Umbrella," brought to you by the WOR Bamberger Studios and our musical interlude. And now let us have a word from one of our sponsors.
In a few days, the Chevrolet Motor Company will announce a great new car. We believe it is unquestionably the finest motor car this company has ever designed or built. Chevrolet's success has been due largely to the loyalty of its owners. Therefore, we are giving you this advance information so that you can arrange to be one of the first to experience the thrills of driving this new car. And when we say thrills, we mean just that. You will get the thrill of a smooth 60-horsepower six-cylinder engine with a speed of 65 to 70 miles per hour. The thrill of driving the first and only low-priced car with both simplified freewheeling and the silent shift synchromesh transmission. You will get the thrill of ultra-modern styling in smart new bodies by Fisher. And finally, the thrill of Chevrolet's greater comfort, durability, and economy at prices among the lowest at which motor cars are sold. So take advantage of this advance information to Chevrolet owners. And whether or not you intend to buy, arrange to drive this new car yourself and learn firsthand why Chevrolet is truly the great American value for 1932.
Thank you very much. The preceding commercial announcement was sent to you on behalf of the Chevrolet Motor Corporation of Detroit, Michigan. And now we continue today's musical interlude featuring electrically recorded pieces of music of the day. We would like to listen to, at this time, and in answer to many requests from listeners all over the WOR Bamberger listening area, we would like to play for you the Ipana Troubadours singing one of their favorite ballads. And remember the slogan, Ipana for the smile of health, Sal Hepatica for the smile of beauty. Now it is the Ipana Troubadours and one of the favorite ballads of our time, The Man I Love. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ipana Troubadours. In answer to many requests, we have just heard the very popular Ipana Troubadours play The Man I Love from the Broadway stage. Remember the slogan, Ipana for the smile of beauty, Sal Hepatica for the smile of health. And we would like to suggest that you ask for Ipana toothpaste at your favorite drugstore. Ipana for the smile of beauty. This is WOR in New York City, broadcasting on 710 kilocycles throughout the WOR listening area. And we would like to say good afternoon to all the WOR listeners who are enjoying this afternoon's recorded electrically transcribed program entitled Musical Interlude. And now once again, answering many requests of listeners all over the WOR listening area, and we would like to thank you for your requests, which have come in on every mail delivery here at the station. If you would like to request a piece of music to be played on Musical Interlude, send your name and address and the tune that you would like to hear to WOR Musical Interlude, Bamberger's Department Store, Newark, New Jersey. And now our concluding piece of music is played and sung by the ever-popular Rudy Valli and his Connecticut Yankees. They play and sing Outside.
Outside the rain was pouring down, big boy felt mighty blue. Outside the wind was howling round, and she felt lonesome blue. Outside they heard the thunder crash, she looked at him and sighed. Though she knew it wasn't right, she let him stay all night. Yes, she did, yes, she did, outside. Shining bright on our small canoe. She said, let's row all night. I felt like rowing too. Outside, the stream was very wet. She looked at me and sighed. Though I know you hate to pet, I've got my mind all set. Either pet or get wet outside. Had come back unexpectedly. Outside the door began to crack. He must have lost his key. Outside he shouted, who are you? I'm selling ice, I cried. Then he yelled, say that ain't fair, 'cause we've got a frigidaire. Sell your ice, outside.
Thank you, Rudy Valli and your Connecticut Yankees. That was an answer to many requests from all over the WOR listening area. That recording was a Bluebird recording made in Camden, New Jersey. For those of you who would like to order it from your favorite recording store or music shop, ask for Outside by Rudy Valli and his Connecticut Yankees. This is Franklin P. Knight, your musical host, saying thank you for listening to today's musical interlude and we would love to hear from you wherever you might be. And now our theme, Let a Smile Be Your Umbrella, by the Roger Wolf Kahn Orchestra. Musical Interlude with your musical host, Franklin T. Knight, has come to you from the palatial studios of the WOR Broadcast Corporation, high atop the Bamberger Department Store building in downtown Newark, New Jersey. Thank you very much for listening, and we would like to invite you to stay tuned for the AMP Gypsies, which follow on the Blue Network immediately following this electrically transcribed radio program. Yes, and we would like to dedicate our theme song by Roger Wolf Kahn's Orchestra this afternoon to all of you shut-ins who are listening today to Musical Interlude. And that's a very fine musical selection indeed, and certainly a fine suggestion for all of us to follow. Let a smile be your umbrella. A program reminder for listeners to WOR in the WOR listening area. Immediately following Musical Interlude will be heard the A&P Gypsies starring Jessica Dragonet, soprano. Immediately after the A&P Gypsies, we suggest you listen to Folk Carter, who reports the news of the world here, there, and everywhere over WOR. Thank you, Roger Kahn and his orchestra. And that concludes today's Musical Interlude with your musical host, Franklin P. Knight. You are listening to WOR, the Bamberger Broadcasting Corporation in Newark, New Jersey, with special studios in New York City. The time is now 12 noon.
How'd you like that? Thank you. How'd you like that? Now, for those of you who wondered what in the devil you tuned in on, that was a kind of a free-form recreation of a radio program as it could very well have been heard and was probably heard, that kind of show very widely heard, just about the time of roughly the late 1920s and the early 30s, possibly even a little earlier than that. And for those of you who wondered what in the world we were using the actual equipment of that period. Let you know what it really sounded like. This is no filters, no fakes, nothing else done to alter the sound. And the actual microphone that I'm using, or was using, I'm using a contemporary mic, of course, right now. The actual microphone that I was using was and there it is, it's got the number all over it. It is a 1923, and it was used up through the early 30s. It was a 1923 model, a 1923 double button Western Electric carbon broadcast mic, a very rare microphone. And of course, it was broadcast. There are a lot of amateur microphones around at that period, but this is a broadcast mic, which was a very special character. It's a, for those of you who are technically inclined, this is a double-button carbon, and you can tell there's plenty of carbon hiss in there. Although, to be perfectly honest, the hiss is a little louder or a little higher on this particular mic than it would have been during its heyday, because we have not repacked this mic. This has got the same... it is, for those of you who might wonder about this, there's a big difference here between the types of microphones used now than were used in the early days of radio. The microphone of the time... You know, I'm almost falling into that pattern of speech, you know, the microphone. You notice how the announcers spoke with a... We've been listening to a lot of transcriptions of ancient shows here. And all the announcers spoke with a very distinct and very articulated speech. Very formal. This is Franklin P. Knight broadcasting to you from the WOR studios in New York. And now just switch the carbon mic when I give you the cue here, Herb. Just switch it on, and you'll hear the big difference. I will continue to talk. Okay, now I'm back on the carbon microphone, and you'll notice that the carbon mic, a lot of the lows that are in the normal speech pattern are cut out, and in fact, so are many of the highs, that almost all of the center, you might say the middle range, comes through quite clearly. But you can identify a person's voice on it, but you lose a lot of the overtones and the undertones. And this was compounded, if you can imagine, listening to this broadcast on a perhaps a paper cone speaker, a magnetic speaker of the Atwater Kent variety. It is almost really nothing more than a large earphone with a great big paper cone coming out of it. So you got this high-pitched voice where if everybody talked at this kind of length, and they actually picked announcers so that they could cut through this type of microphone, so that his voice was high enough so that you could hear it very clearly, and he could speak so distinctly that one could hear it through the static and all the various crashes and rumbles that you heard on the radio broadcasting frequencies of the period.
Very good.
Once a pro, always a pro. Yes, sir. Now, we've got other stuff for you. Before we go any further, if you're really... Now, I must point out very quickly, this is not and has nothing to do with nostalgia. Please don't think this has anything to do with nostalgia, because we're far away enough in time from all the beginnings of this business, television and radio and all of it. When I say we, I'm talking about the whole world, everybody. That the early days of this industry are now history, no longer nostalgia. There's a great dividing line between history and nostalgia. And to have remembered a thing like I just reproduced there, you would have to be a very old person. You'd have to be well up in your 70s and 80s, perhaps even older, to have clearly remembered a thing like that. But that's the way it sounded, and how we got that idea, and in other words, how we really... reproduced it, was listening to actual recordings. They didn't, of course, have tape recordings in those days. They didn't have transcriptions of the kind we think of. But they did have discs, large acetate discs upon which many things were recorded. And those are getting very, very rare and scarce. You can't really find them. And if you do find them, they're almost impossible to play them because they deteriorate. But the reproduction that we did was pretty close to the actuality. The music was taken off of actual radio shows of that period, which we re-recorded on tape. And the commercial you heard was an actual 1931, 32. It was done in 31. They were about to introduce the 32 Chevy. And that's all very authentic. by the way, another thing interesting is that recordings of that period were not recorded the way we record today. There were all sorts of techniques used to record. Some of the recordings were done with actual cutting discs. Others were done with a kind of vibrating shim technique, or all sorts of techniques. But very few of the techniques got any kind of depth in them. The problem was they lost a lot of the bass. They lost a lot of the high notes. So it's very hard to know what music actually sounded like in those days. I mean, if you were actually in a studio listening to the Ipana Troubadours, it would be very difficult to know In other words, they must have sounded a great deal different in listening to them right there than they sounded over the radio or over the transcriptions that they cut at the time. But that's what you heard. I bet a lot of people all of a sudden tuned in and they said, what the hell's going on? Hey, listen, speaking of great sounds, one of our engineers, Herb here, was digging down amid all the kind of dross that drifts down to the bottom of a radio station's enormous attic full of past and gone and defeated junk. And he came across a great old transcription of a radio broadcast, which at the time was considered quite the historical. And tune up your gain there and set your tape recorder, because this is a real piece of true Americana. I'd have to say this is Americana. And you can just see the whole difference in the media between now and then, and the attitude towards itself and the public. And this is a very interesting piece of business. So turn up your tape recorders now and listen carefully. This is from the vast archives of this. For those of you who don't know, I have to preface it very quickly here. WOR in New York, and this is not chauvinism, we're just merely telling you a historical fact, is one of the oldest major radio stations in the world. And, of course, you can always tell the very, I suppose you might say, the very early radio stations, because they have a three-letter call, among other things. Three-letter calls have not been issued for many, many years. WOR is a three-letter call. You have other great stations around the country, KNX, out on the West Coast, KYW, stations like WSB, WSM, WLW and WGN. These are spotted all around the country. These are all great pioneers. Well, you can't forget WLW, which is a great pioneer station. And all these stations got going in the very earliest days of radio broadcasting, back in the very early 1920s, which, of course, Marconi's experiments actually were not made too many years prior to that, historically speaking. And so in the very early 1920s, when radio first began to make its sounds heard throughout the nation, KDKA got on the air, and a few years later, a year or two later, actually, WOR went on, I guess in 1922, wasn't it? Something like that. And so we have all kinds of curious historical pieces of trivia and impediment, and yet they become truly history as time goes past. This is a broadcast that was made, or part of a broadcast, that was made in the mid-1930s on WOR at a point that was very important to the radio industry throughout the country and specifically to WOR.
WOR, Newark, New Jersey. We wish to thank the Gordon Baking Company for relinquishing their time in order that we might bring to you the program from Carnegie Hall, attendant upon the ceremonies of the opening of WOR's new 50,000-watt transmitter. The Lone Ranger, presented by the Gordon Baking Company, will be on the air Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock. Ladies and gentlemen, in a few moments, WOR will discontinue the service of its present 5,000-watt transmitter. The programs which have been broadcast over this station in the last 8 years are dedicated to its listeners in the past. And with its new and increased facilities, WOR enters broader fields of endeavor, and it dedicates itself to the continuance of public service. And now, with the passing of 5,000 watts, we present to you our new 50,000-watt transmitter. WOR presents its gala program in celebration of the opening of its new 50,000-watt transmitter. The program comes to you directly from Carnegie Hall in New York City.
And that was a 2 or 3 hour special that they did on the sudden acquisition of 50,000 watts, which incidentally in those days, and still is, a tremendous change in a radio station. And it was held at Carnegie Hall, and there were thousands of stars that appeared on it, among them Ben Burney. We were listening to this tape, or Herb was. Among them, about the only one that we know of that's still around and still performing, was Ethel Merman. She was one of the stars that was on this great special. By the way, for those of you that are interested technically, he was using a ribbon velocity mic, in case you're curious. He was not using a carbon mic in that particular transcription, which came after the carbon mic days. If you're further interested, that was an RCA Model 66B ribbon velocity mic. All right. So you know, this is history. It's not nostalgia. It's history. It has to be treated as that. And I just think that some of the views. You know what I'd like to see? I would like to see some films of very early television broadcasts. I mean, really early television broadcasts. Some of the very first stuff that was done in the early 30s. You know, at the time that this broadcast that we recreated, they were actually doing television at that time. So people think television came in with Howdy Doody. But actually, it would be fascinating to see some films of the very earliest television broadcast. Have you ever had a chance to see, I just saw it once, on Late Late Movies, a very strange movie starring Jack Oakey that was about WOR, and he was a very early radio engineer. It shows him building the equipment, and they were doing a big broadcast on the roof of Bamberger's with a tent, all kinds of stars showing up with big, elegant tuxedos and stuff, and there was an enormous rainstorm. And it was about it was a regular commercial movie. Did you ever see that movie? You ever heard of it? It's a famous old movie, and it was about the period that we attempted to recreate today. So we might as well give you one last shot of this beautiful 1923 double button carbon mic.
So hang loose, gang. Think clean thoughts and walk around and try to keep your knees high. Okay?